All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. Tom?
Oh, and psychic Tom Padgett. Crystal ball, ready to go. Waiting on Tony.
All right. Well, Tony's going to join us late, I guess. I did figure out how to add him later, so we'll figure out how to patch him in. But, yeah, he's going straight to voicemail. So, obviously, probably still digging out from the third nor'easter to hit the freaking East Coast. And,
that's got to be getting old, buddy. 12 days. Got to be getting old.
Yeah. It's tough. And
how bad did you get it?
Well, we got like 2 feet of snow between the last two storms, but a lot of it melted between. So this last one, we probably got 18 inches, but the good thing is, like a few months ago, we had that bad storm before the snow, and it knocked out power for a few days, and basically the response to that was like all new lines and cutting down all the trees that were obstructions. So we didn't have any issues with the power even flickering. So they got that stuff on lockdown. Actually, I think Tony's dad does that for a living, or used to, these alignments. So he used to do that. I'm very familiar with that situation. And his dad went up north for a ice storm one time. But yeah, they had so many crews out there that, like, every stop, they had, like, 12 telephone trucks from, like, all over the country. I was driving around doing my logging, and I saw them everywhere. So they pretty much patched up every issue you could possibly have. Unless it's a real freak storm, trees get really uprooted. But. So we didn't have any issues with that, but otherwise, it was bad for the coast in every state up here. Coast got it worse, so I'm glad I didn't have any waterfront property on the ocean. Even where I used to live when I was first starting Fight News Unlimited down in Cape Cod, that town got the same town got really destroyed on the coastline. Sandwich mass. And Fox News actually had a lot of clips of my old high school town, Quincy City, more like. Yeah, bad stuff. So I picked a good location, I guess, inland New Hampshire. Just got to deal with the plowing and the shoveling. Not too much else. Anyway, we got a couple big MMA stories to talk about, and we'll patch Tony in before we get to the boxing stuff. But I'll tell you right away, Tom, I think we're in the wrong business because I don't know if you've seen this. But,
yeah, how about that?
Rampage Jackson, his manager.
You know, you put it out there, it's kind of like the 100th monkey principle. And, I don't know if you're familiar with that. I don't want to get into it. Google it. Yeah. But, yeah, you put it out, and look at what's happened, buddy. Like bowling pins. Bowling pins. You threw the ball, you got a strike. Bang, bang, bang. Wow.
I don't know if you're talking about you're talking about CM Punk now?
Yes. Oh. Yes.
I was going in a different direction, but we could start with that one. I got that one right in front of me too.
I mean that link to the article you sent was great. That guy really put some serious analysis into that. So
yeah, actually, I do have an article that it's halfway written on this, and it's called "The Case for CM Punk versus Floyd Mayweather," but. This guy, his opinion is great and everything, and his article is great, but his premise is wrong that it should happen now, because we already know the proven athlete that Floyd Mayweather is, right? You know, he wasn't in fake entertainment sports. He was in real sports. You know, he was in a boxing ring for years, so we know his pedigree, but we really don't, the jury's really still out on if CM Punk can really fight. You know, he can wrestle, obviously. But can he really fight? Yeah. You know, he's got a belt and everything, but in jiu-jitsu, but can he really fight? So we know Floyd Mayweather can fight, and if he can keep it standing, I mean, it's definitely a great matchup. But they're just trying to sell it short. They're trying to say it's never going to happen because of the money. And so you have to have something change that equation. And what changes that equation is CM Punk goes out there and beats the ever-living crap out of somebody. You gotta feed him somebody, basically, whether it's you know, an easy win, or is somebody that he struggles just enough against to show that he's evolved? So I disagree with the idea that they should do it now.
He has that one, Mike Jackson, who's 0-1, he's calling him out. I'm sure you remember that from the article. So, hey, what's your cliche? Somebody's always got to go. Two guys that are not undefeated. Unwin?
Yeah.
Well, that's terrible grammar. You're the grammar guy.
Unvictorious. He's unvictorious.
Unvictorious. Thank you. I stand corrected. Unwin. Somebody's O has got to go.
And they say he's going to be on his hometown card in Chicago. He's already come out and said that he does have a matchup. I mean, a date, but no matchup yet, I guess, is official. So we'll see. But interesting stuff. Maybe they'll put him up against the guy that just fought there, that busted, that broke his foot.
Yeah, we'd have a little heels. Weight division mix up, but my God, where do we begin with that one? Where do we even begin?
I think it's got a good shot of happening eventually if he doesn't, you know, look like Conor McGregor out there and start really turning heads and make Floyd scared of him, then, you know, all he has to do is win. And I think they can make that fight happen. And I think Floyd could make 20, 30 million out of it. Whether 100 million, I don't think so. But yeah, 20, 30 million, he could do it easily. Even as a co-main event. And a lot of people point to the past opportunities that boxers had in MMA. And, you know, they say the best example is Holly Holm. But I think the best example is freaking Ray Mercer. Because he just went in there against a guy that was a pure veteran of MMA, and one punch knocked the guy out, you know? And that was really back in the older days of MMA. And we had him on the show. We talked to him, and he said that he would love to do that rematch in boxing, because Kimbo was boxing at the time. Because he had Kimbo. He had a match with Kimbo. I think Kimbo guillotined him or something in the MMA, but then he had this chance against Ray Mercer, had his chance against Tim Sylvia, and just wiped that guy out. One punch.
Yeah. that was hideous. Ooh. Or beautiful, depending on your perspective. If you're in Mercer's corner, yeah, that was beautiful. Work of art.
And those guys weren't in tip-top shape, you know? And obviously, we've heard a lot about CM Punk. He's getting in better shape. He's doing a lot better training. He's hanging in with the tough guys, so he should be able to handle this. But, you know, at the same time, Floyd Mayweather's been doing it for decades in a combat sports experience, you know, real time. So he's got the advantage there. No matter how much training in MMA that CM Punk has, he's still new to it really as Mayweather. But Mayweather has such an edge with the boxing.
Yeah. I mean, you have to admit, it would certainly be a draw. But it's like Cormier brought up a good point about that. That Mayweather kind of, you know, he leans a lot. That's the secret of his defense. He'll lean back, and he can get away with it. But when you do that against a good wrestler, well, you're probably going to be taken down. So I would question how much of a ground game Floyd can develop.
And I actually hear that Floyd Mayweather and the UFC broke off contract negotiations for any rematch with McGregor in the boxing ring or the cage, so we don't think that's going to happen. But the other thing, too, is Mayweather has started production of his own video game. So we're going to have Floyd Mayweather's Punch-Out, Knockout. I don't think it's going to be called that, but definitely we'll have to watch out for that one. That might get me get back into the gaming scene, if that's a good one. But there's also a couple other big stories in the news this week. Scott Coker, we talked a little bit about this last week, is throwing his hands up in the air in regards to Mirko Krokop. And to me, it's funny that Mirko Krokop's first fight back with a major promotion here is in the UK. You know, do you think that's a purposeful thing? It's not just because he resides in Croatia here most of the year or whatever. He's they're doing it because when you go to the UK, they don't have like an official commission, so you basically do your own testing. You're responsible for your own testing. So you got to hire out your own firms and all that stuff. And this came up in the Kung Lee thing because Kung Lee was about to sue the UFC over his situation with the false positive test for whatever steroid they popped him for over in Japan, I think. So most of the time when the UFC goes overseas, they have to do their own testing. And here Bellator is in the same situation. They do their own testing. And actually, I've been kind of putting together a story on this myself, but Bellator has kind of a little bit of a shady history with testing and the steroids issue as a whole. And all you have to do is look at Kimbo Slice, who's fortunately not here to speak for himself anymore. But it makes you wonder about, you know, if Kimbo's family might have missed out on a wrongful death suit there, because there's a situation where two times they let Kimbo fight in Texas, and Texas just happens to have a six-month suspension for the first time, and I think a year for the next time. So basically he sat out, he knew he was doing steroids, he sat out for those, and came back, and then he was supposed to fight in a rematch against James Colossus Thompson, where? The UK. So after a second positive pop for the Shamrock fight, you just had to shake your head and say, are they purposely setting it up so he can juice and get away with it? And then the problems that he had when he had his heart attack or heart failure, a lot of the articles said that steroid use could promote that kind of condition. But the only problem with him is you could also point to all the previous drug use that he had been involved in admittedly. So obviously PCP doesn't help your heart either.
No, not at all.
But Scott Coker has basically said, you know, we have every right to have this guy fight for us. If the USADA had its problem with the suspension being violated, they should have brought the issue up earlier, is his point of view.
Good point.
If you wanted to take action, you should have took action a long time ago. Because to me, honestly, when we booked it, we didn't even know there were issues. He's already fighting, so we thought he was able to fight. He says, listen, USADA works with the UFC. They're doing their own thing, so go do it. I just feel like the timing of it is a little bit questionable, because at the end of the day, if you really wanted to enforce it, you should have enforced it 2 years ago when Mirko fought in Japan. But at the same time, I think all fighters know that if they really want to fight, they have to go overseas to get around these suspensions. And other people have done it before, and I don't think anybody's really raised many eyebrows about it. It's just most of the time when you get these suspensions, they're in states. And other states in the United States happen to abide by them, and places in Japan and back alleys don't abide by them. So, hey, you know, if that's his living and he wants to fight and it's that important to him, then, you know, obviously a little suspension in some states not going to stop him. I don't know. This one's kind of an iffy issue, but I just don't like the fact that Bellator keeps getting involved with people that are kind of set up so that they can use. You know, here's a situation where if Krokop does decide this might be his last fight, you know, he's going to go in there and wipe Roy Nelson out on steroids when you could probably do it without steroids, but who knows? You know, maybe their commission has told him, hey, you know, we're going to put in our own testing company, and that testing company is not even going to worry about what you're on.
Boy, there's an awful lot of trash talk with those two.
Yeah.
Wow.
Poor Roy, he can't string any wins together, but, you know, when he's got a good game plan, he does pretty well for himself. It's just, it's a tough road for him to get close enough to get a guy into one of those crucifixes that he likes so well. Poor guy. I've always liked him character-wise, but there's a big problem with his physique. It always catches up to him by the third round or so.
Yeah, that's what Krokop said. He said he can just shut his fat mouth. The only thing he has to worry about is I'm having two bloody training sessions every day.
There you go. Anyway, yeah. Well, you got to use the bloody because you're coming to London, I guess. Yeah, that's the setup. Krokop versus Roy Nelson. Now, here's a little bit of a story that's interesting this week. Rick Story has signed with the Professional Fighters League, which we haven't heard a lot about. Actually, John Fitch is another guy who just signed with Bellator. I don't think we talked about that last week. But John Fitch was with the Professional Fighters League, and it was basically the same or similar people that were involved or connected to the World Series of Fighting. And that reminds me, too, Nick Newell is back in the picture talking about going to the UFC, the one-armed fighter there from World Series of Fighting. And Justin Gaethje is already there.
I've never seen him fight.
I saw him fight Justin Gaethje, and it was supposed to be like the big undefeated guys fighting each other, and Gaethje, it was the first time Nick Newell had some stiff competition, and Gaethje just demolished him. It was actually very sad, and Nick Newell stopped fighting for a while. So now he's back, and he's doing well, and they're talking about giving him a shot at the UFC, or trying to lobby for it anyway. But Rick Story has signed with this Professional Fighters League, and these guys are really taking a different tack into the world of MMA. They're deciding to do it like a regular sports schedule. It's going to start in June, and it's going to have a regular season, playoffs, and championship fights in different weight divisions. So it's kind of a hybrid between a tournament style like Bellator used to do and a football season, basically. Story said, I'm just going to say it's worth my while, and stacking on top the format they have and being able to win that amount of money. It's a $1 million tournament, by the way. It just kind of suits my interest because it's performance-based. You win, you get paid more. You lose, you're out. It's just cut and dried. And Story's 19-9 in MMA, has not fought since a second-round TKO loss to Donald Cerrone back at UFC 202 in August of 2016. And his contract ran out, and he did not renegotiate. Left him with a bad taste in his mouth because a lot of the people that he beat were getting paid double what they were offering him. So, yeah, it's never given you a fair chance when that happens. And he's also, like your boy Stipe, interested in becoming a firefighter. And I don't know if you've noticed, but Modelo Especial, which is a new sponsor of the UFC, has a new commercial with Stipe talking about his firefighter situation. It's a pretty good commercial. Pretty decent. But basically, he's talking about the fact that this thing is completely different. It's not going to work. It's not work out for 3 months to build up to one fight. It's kind of like a marathon. Things are going to change a little bit, he said. So, I mean, imagine it has to change your whole fighting style and everything. It's going to be a season, so it's going to be more like the Ultimate Fighter all the time, I guess. But ironically, his situation of being out of the fight game for a couple years had to do with something that a lot of fighters don't experience. He had to have a double root canal on his two front teeth after he got knocked out by Cerrone. And he said the sensitivity of his teeth took over a year to go away. So every time he pushed down on them, it was really painful. So it's crazy. So it's actually worked out for him that he was able to take that time off and he didn't extend his UFC contract because then he would have had to fight with bad teeth.
So you want to be a fighter.
Yeah. Yep. All right. I know we had a couple boxing stories there. Now, what I was trying to get into when you switch gears, good analogy since it's a car story, and just steered us into CM Punk stuff, I was trying to say we're in the wrong business because Rampage Jackson has got a video that's going viral. His manager, Tiki Goshen, just negotiated a contract for him. And this is back in November. So Rampage Jackson set him up with a video to show him his Rampage, pretending like he's showing him a new vehicle that Rampage just picked up for himself. And it turns out at the end of the conversation, he hands the keys to his manager, Tiki Goshen, and it's a brand new Range Rover, $100,000 vehicle he gifted to his manager, Tiki Goshen. Pretty cool. So, basically, he's going to fight. This is the big news on this, too. This hasn't been released, I don't think, before this article. His next fight is actually going to be against Wanderlei Silva for the fourth time in his career. And it's going to be in Brazil. So, interesting stuff. And if he wins, you know, this would be the perfect retirement fight. So you can imagine if this was a one-fight deal for multi-million dollars, it would make sense that he gives his manager a
$100,000 bonus. You know, it's almost like the seniors league in the PGA for golf, you know. Tennis, it's like the legends, I guess they could call these guys.
Dan Severn's fighting the winner.
Yeah.
And here's one other story where Bellator is in the mix of doing things differently than the UFC. In a good way, though. Cryptocurrency, we've heard about this. You're a tax guy. You know about this. Dash is this new company that's getting involved in MMA. It's one of the cryptocurrency people. And cryptocurrency company Dash has paid Rory McDonald more than the entire Reebok payout for UFC Austin. So this is a pretty interesting development. Rory McDonald received $250,000 for representing this brand at Bellator 192. Reebok's payout was $165,000 for all fighters on the UFC Austin Fight Night card last month. So it goes to show you that the Reebok deal really can hurt a lot of people in the mixed martial arts world.
Oh, of course. I think that we were able to see that when the whole thing started. I mean, a lot of fighters see that. They just started doing the numbers, and it's been a disaster. But when does that run out, Rich? Do you know?
I believe it's got to be, it was a six-year deal back in 2015, so probably 2020, 2021, somewhere there.
Oh, my God, that long.
Yeah. 6 years. And Dash is actually kind of on the shady end of these cryptocurrency people, from what it sounds like. Formerly known as Darkcoin. It's touted for its instant transaction times, anonymity, and decentralized model. So another person involved is who better than the Westland gangster, Chael Sonnen.
Who?
Chael Sonnen calls himself the Westland gangster. He thinks he's a gangster, so he's with the gangster currency people. He actually shouldn't even laugh because he actually has been he's been charged criminally with a scheme, some kind of a scheme on home improvement or something with a development that he was working on. So he actually does have gangster history, white collar gangster criminal history. But yeah, $250,000 for one fight for Rory McDonald's. So hopefully we see more of that. I mean, it's always good to see sponsors getting involved. And let's see, what else we got? Got the big fight night card coming up, 127 from London as well. I guess UFC and Bellator are copying each other here, doing fights in London. Fabricio Werdum fighting Alexander Volkov over there at the O2 Arena on Saturday, St. Patrick's Day. I guess that's a good time to have a fight in the UK. Fabricio is 23-7. Alexander Volkov is 29-6. Volkov is very skinny. Skinny and tall for a heavier weight. Verdum, obviously we know what his style is and experience is. He's been dynamic and outstanding at certain points, and then you wonder what the hell happened in other fights. So this one is going to be interesting. It's going to show you how far Alexander has come, too. I mean, he's got six losses, but he's got a hell of a chin. He's got amazing kicks. He's a better kickboxer than anything, I think. And he's kind of like a poor man's, what's his name there? The guy that just fought Tyron Woodley three times. Stephen Thompson, is that his name? Wonder Boy?
Wonder Boy, yeah. Stephen Thompson.
Kind of like a poor man's Stephen
Thompson. Verdun better not look past him. And I'm sure he won't. He better not.
And then you got Jimmy Manua, who has a record of 17-3, fighting Jan Blachowicz, who's 21-7. That should be a decent fight there. Both of those guys have been war-tested. And another fight on the main card. We got Tom Duquesnoy, 15-2, fighting Terrion Ware, who's 17-7. Leon Edwards, 14-3, fighting Peter Sabota, 17-5-1. Charles Byrd, 9-4, fighting John Phillips, 21-6. Danny Roberts, 14-3, fighting Oliver Enkamp. Jack Marshman, 22-7, fighting Bradley Scott, who's 11-5. Hakeem Duwodu, 7-0-1, fighting Danny Henry, who's 11-2. Paul Craig, 9-2, fighting Magomed Ankalaev, who is 9-0. Third fight of the night is Mark Godbeer, 13-3, fighting Dmitry Sosnovsky, who is 10-0. And you got Nasrat Hakparast, who is 8-2, fighting Nad Narimani, who is 10-2. And if I ever get a picture on Sherdog, I want to get a picture like Nad's. You're going to have to check that out.
Yeah,
he looks like he is ready to fight in that picture. It's great. Anyway, Stephen Ray in the first fight of the night, he's 21-7, fighting Cajun Johnson, who is 22-11-1. Yeah, if you have a chance, look up Nad, Narimani, on Sherdog. Yeah.
What a cool name. Yeah. Nad. What a cool name.
He's a Nad guy. And he's just got this look on his face. I don't know if it's mid-fight or before a fight, but he's just got his teeth, like, showing and his mouth wide open and screaming. And yeah, that's a good picture. Anyway, let's see if we can connect Tony. Tell him he's, he missed out on such great MMA conversation. I'm sure he's going to be mad. He might have missed the Floyd Mayweather talk, but I bet that's it.
Tornado.
There it is. Yeah. Did you get my message?
And I saw that you'd called. I never listened to the message. What'd you say?
I said the Weather Channel told me to call this number to get a tornado. I don't know what's going on. I'm looking for a tornado. Yeah. Were you still digging out from the three successive nor'easters we've had here?
No, this one wasn't too bad. I got him from the gym. I was like, shit, my phone's almost dead. So I threw it on the charger. And then I was like, I checked it the one time. I'm like, okay, I ain't called yet. And I went in the other room and I was going back looking at something. And then I was like, oh shit. I'm like, oh shit, I missed this call.
Well, the good news is, and I know you might be devastated by this, it might not be good news for you, but we got all the MMA talk out of the way already. So we got to talk boxing for the rest of the show. And we're live already, so we got all that out of the way. You don't even have to listen to any MMA talk unless we go on a tangent. But Deontay Wilder and Evander Holyfield are in the news this week for saying that drug cheats in boxing should go to jail. So that's the first argument we're going to talk about this getting into boxing. Deontay Wilder, his story came out first. He said, I've said multiple times over and over again what I feel. These sanctioning bodies, they're getting money off those belts. That's why they keep bringing these guys back. Money rules boxing. It's just sad that this stuff is going on in boxing. These guys need to do these kinds of things to have a come up, to get an edge over these fighters. We risk our lives in the ring anyway. Now you're putting something in your body that gives you even more bodily damage that will be applied to me. They should go to jail. Anybody that's cheating in boxing, they should just go to jail. That'll cut it out. As long as we have money involved, when we have this politics and all that involved, nothing's going to be done about it.
Dropping the hammer, wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. And we're going to get into another side of, not drugs, but another issue in boxing that's given some people some different concerns about safety. But that's the other half of that article, and then there's another whole article about that situation we're going to get into. But Evander Holyfield has said the same deal. Put people in jail for 30 days. Stop it then, says Holyfield, when asked about his opinion on those who are found to have taken performance-enhancing substances. He says, you're touching drugs, they suspend you, and it costs you money. They talk about get over it. That don't really work because somebody, one of the fighters, trains real hard their whole life. People don't know how bad it hurts people when they get robbed. That's what boxing is. Some people don't have a lot of people following them, but that doesn't mean they're not a great fighter. So, yeah, both of those guys, two heavyweights, one ex-heavyweight boxer and one current champions too, you know. So go to jail, go directly to jail, no commissions involved. It's a tough stance, but I don't know. Maybe it's time for that, because this is actually ironically all coming from Canelo Alvarez, who might have accidentally eaten some steroid meat. But like we talked about last week, we don't know how serious that argument really is, considering pretty much everybody in Mexico knows that all the cattle farmers use this stuff. And you only have to take it in trace amounts for it to have a benefit on you. So this makes you throw your hands up and say, well, you know, he's got a good argument, but at the same time, he could have made a good argument for, you know, getting away with using it. In the same breath. Who knows? But yeah, don't cheat around Deontay. We'll send you to jail. And then Scott Quigg did not make weight for his fight against Oscar Valdez over the weekend, or last week, Friday afternoon. This is when he failed to make weight. So he didn't get a chance to win the belt, and he was 128.8 pounds, so far over the limit that California State Athletic Commission rules said that he could not even try to get any closer. If a fighter is more than 2 pounds over the contract weight, he is not allowed to attempt to cut more weight. So,
you know what, Rich? That's a good thing. You know, because you're seeing a lot of instances where fighters are, you know, at the last minute, you know, really trying to cut those last few pounds. So the a few of the regulations that I've seen over the last few years, which I think really started coming to the forefront after that Arturo Gatti-Joey Gamache fight back, I think that was 2000 or 2001 maybe. That's when, you know, Arturo, you know, rehydrated, like something like a ridiculous, like 19 pounds or 20 pounds or something like that in like the best 24 hours. And you could see he was just so much physically bigger than Gamache, and he injured him, you know, ending his career. They're doing things now where they're having fighters do periodic weigh-ins, and they have a target weight. So that's, you know, preventing guys from, you know, just draining themselves at the last minute, because that involves the safety of both fighters. And from a guy that's done a drastic weight cut before, I know how severely limited I felt in the ring. And, you know, you have instances where fighters that have done such a drastic weight loss and left themselves so dehydrated, ended up having serious repercussions. I've known instances where fighters were so drained and so weak, you know, they had medical, you know, complications. Perfect example, which they show in the movie Bleed for this, about Vinny Pazienza, when he fought Roger Mayweather, and he was killing himself to make weight. And after the fight, you know, his body was so dehydrated that he basically went into shock. And even reading in his book, he was saying, like, his father was afraid that they were going to lose him. You know, his blood pressure had dropped down, and, you know, he was in this dire situation.
Yeah.
And then also protects the opponent as well, similar to the Gotti-Gamache fight, where, you know, instead of both fighters being 140 pounds, you had a 140-pounder versus, you know, you had a junior welterweight versus a middleweight. And, you know, that was obviously a dangerous situation because the smaller man got, you know, brutally knocked out and injured by the larger man because he had an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
So it's basically to protect both parties.
Well, for Quigg's side, he says, I'm so focused and disciplined. Thursday, I was 3 pounds over, which is normal. I tried and I tried. There's nothing more I could do. I apologize to Oscar and his team. I've got to stay focused on the fight, but missing weight is not acceptable. We'll deal with it. I apologize to everybody. By rule, he was fined 20% of his official $100,000 purse, and half of that's going to Valdez, who was a two-time Mexican Olympian, with the other half going to the commission. But he's going to make way more than that $80,000 he'd be left with in that situation because the package for his whole side is closer to $500,000 plus, on top of that, money for British television rights. So, you know, basically he could get away with it in this situation coming in overweight. And it's turned out that Valdez actually might never fight again, I read, because his jaw had to be wired shut or something. Shattered his jaw. So this could be another Gamache situation. It's bad news for boxing to have a situation like this in an overweight fighter situation. But he said he's going to continue to fight featherweight, win or lose. This was the other night at the weigh-in. Crazy. Every other fighter on the card made weight. Unreal.
You get some undisciplined fighters out there, no matter where you put them at. Like, they just always seem to have trouble making weight. When I was at Lock Haven last week, we were talking about, a former teammate of ours. He was there my freshman year. And in your boxing, he won the national championship at 119 pounds. And they have stories about him making weight. The next year, he moved up to 125 pounds. They have stories about him having trouble making weight. The year I was there, he was fighting at 132 pounds. So that's basically 13 pounds in 2 years, and we still have stories about him having trouble making weight. I'm like, if you put him at anything under heavyweight, you would have heard stories about him having trouble making weight. You know?
Right.
He was tremendously talented, terrible work ethic. And they even said the one time going into the regionals, you know, he had a walkover. You know, he didn't have anybody in his weight class, being that, you know, you had a lot of your academies were able to field guys at the lower weight classes. You know, a lot of other schools, you know, they didn't have guys at 112 and 119 and 125. So he was having a walkover, and he was a couple pounds overweight, and they said the night before he has this brilliant idea that he's going to drink a six-pack of beer because that will help him piss more and dehydrate himself.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the next morning he got up, and he was being, say, 5 pounds overweight. He's like 9 pounds overweight or something ridiculous, you know?
This makes you
an idiot.
Yeah, well, you know, we, like I said, we joked around about him, like, you could put him at anything under heavyweight, and it was like, he'd be like, oh my God, he's in the sauna. Really?
But we got this story here that was also talking about cheating with Deontay Wilder. Has an important paragraph here, talking about all the other instances. Carl Frampton was a pound over 126 for his July fight against Andres Gutierrez. Gervonta Davis was embarrassed by the scale last summer, being 2 pounds over and forfeiting his IBF 130-pound belt. Eduardo Ramirez failed on the scale in December before fighting IBF featherweight champ Lee Selby. Diego De La Hoya missed a chance at upping his profile as his ESPN slot evaporated when he missed weight in mid-December before a meeting with Jose Salgado. Javier Fortuna missed the mark in January before his face-off with Robert Easter. And how about Luis Neri, WBC champ, 5 pounds past bantamweight the day before his rematch.
Wow.
And Shinsuke Yamanaka, and then on top of that, I think he got popped for something again. So, lovely. But he beat the shit out of the guy. Retired him. So, he did what he came there to do. Unfortunately, yeah, he had an unfair advantage. Crazy stuff. Anyway, we do have a lot of boxing to talk about. A little bit, anyway. Here's a nice guy. Not, I don't know. It could be a bad name or a good name for a boxer. Jack As Is. Jack As Is. He's a welterweight. Fighting in Queensland, Australia. His record is 38-20-5. He lost last week to Rivon Sasser, who was 15-5-1. So I bet his opponents call him Jack As Is. Jack As Is, A-S-I-S, Asis, maybe that's how you pronounce it. Anyway, that's a funny name. These are last Friday's results, I believe, for the 10th. Was 10th Friday or Saturday? Anyway, over in Denmark, Dina Thorslund won the Interim World Boxing Council World Female Super Bantamweight title against Alicia Ashley. Rosalind improves to 11-0. Ashley falls to 24-12-1. And Jesus last week, our Jesus Fight of the Week, I think Dennis Seelan beat Jesus. 18-1-2, Dennis Seelan's record going in, so he gets the 19 wins. Jesus only takes his second loss. Jesus Sanchez. He falls to 8-2. So. Now we gotta find a new one for this week. It's actually kind of a rut right now for all combat sports because there's not a lot of big, huge events going on. It's kind of a lull. Here's one from France. The young up-and-comer Brian Carlos Castano, 14-0. Beat Cedric Vitu, who was 46-2 going into the fight. So Castano gets a big 15th win, and he wins the World Boxing Association World Super Welterweight title. Not that one. What else we have last week? Over in Germany, we had Christian Pawlak. 34-8-1 at super middleweight, beat Bosco Misek, who was 13-6 for the WBU super middleweight title. We had heavyweights Ratko Draskovic, 34-12-2, beating Matthew Ellis, who was 20 wins, 13 losses, and 2 draws. How about that article I sent you guys about the Biggest Loser in Britain?
I mean, how dare force him to retire?
His girlfriend convinced him not to box anymore. Robin Deacon, I think his name was. He had like two wins to go with 50-something losses. Decided to retire.
You know, Rich, I think what the guy needed was Myo-X. He should have been taking some of that stuff, you know. the Myo-X bull.
Yeah. That's funny that they use that. Well, the thing was, I didn't mention it, but I did read that with the Canelo, the drug clenbuterol that Canelo was popped for, They say it's in tainted meat, but in the U.S., they actually did use it at certain points for competition bulls that actually had to, you know, go on fair circuits and win prizes and stuff, but they wouldn't put it into the food supply. So this is just for show, which is like, you know, the Mr. Universe pattern for pageant for bulls after these guys were allowed to use this. So it makes you wonder, like, you know, you really need a bull to be that freaking jacked up for the food supply. I mean, it looks good, but is it really good for you? I don't know. Maybe that's why all the Mexicans are trying to get here. They're sick of eating poisoned meat. Anyway, in Chihuahua, Mexico, we had Marcos Reyes, 35-5, improves to 36-5 with a big win over 15-0 Miguel Angel Suarez for the vacant WBC Latino super middleweight title. I love it when a guy has a record for should be fighting for a world title and he gets a Latino title. Mario Alberto Lozano also on that card at super welterweight, 31-8. He beat up on another Jesus, Luis Jesus Vidalis, who is 12-5. Was 12-5 going, now he's 12-6. All right. A lot of fighting in Mexico. Mexico. Maybe that's why there's a lot of good Mexican fighters, because they've been eating tainted meat for years. For decades. All right. 22-0. Oh, it was the mismatch of the week last week. Went right as planned. Thomas Patrick Ward came in at lightweight over in the United Kingdom. 22-0 was his record coming in. He went to 23-0 because he fought a guy named Lester Cantillano, who is 3-12. 22-0 against 3-12. Wow. And you got this guy's name. I'm going to pronounce this just to see if I can do it. Another guy fought in the United Kingdom, lost to an 0-2 guy, Scott James. Zygomantis Butkovicius.
I like it.
Zygomantis Butkovicius. He is 1-7.
This is the best part of the show. Right here. This is the best part.
How do you get a name like that? Like, that's bad. Zygomantis Butkovicius. Yeah, we had the Oscar Valdez fight. Actually, Oscar Valdez won that fight, but still somehow managed to injure his jaw. That was last week in California, last Saturday. So this is Saturday's fights. Oscar Valdez, 23-0 was his record going in, so he goes to 24-0. Scott Quigg, 34-1-2. Goes down to 34-2-2. But should be in a lot of trouble due to that weight situation. We'll see. Then we had a draw in the co-main event there. Andy Vences, 20-0 against Eric De Leon, 17-0. So nobody's 0 had to go. Except for the third O, they get a one. And that was for a couple titles, World Boxing Council, Continental America's Super Featherweight title, and the vacant World Boxing Organization International Super Featherweight title. They had Arnold Barboza Jr. at Super Lightweight, getting another win, moving to 18-0 against Mike Reed, who falls to 23-2. Alex Saucedo at super lightweight moves to 27-0 with a win over Abner Lopez, who falls to 25-9. That one was for a couple regional belts. And then we had Esquiva Falco, 19-0, moves to 20-0 against Salim Larbi, who falls to 29-2. Nine losses, two draws. And Andy Ruiz Jr. moves up to 30-1 with a win over Devin Vargas, falls to 20-5. And another, Jesus had a tough week last week. And then another lightweight loss, Jesus Arevalo, falls to 2-3 against Brian Lua. Moves up to 4-0. Tough week for Jesus. Chad Witherspoon got a win, too, down there in Atlantic City at heavyweight. He's talking about making some moves at that division. Moves up to 37-3 now over Lamont Capers, who was literally like a last-second replacement. I think I put up a couple posts on this with two different opponents, but it's crazy. Last-minute replacement, Lamont Capers, 9-11-4. So he takes his 12th loss against a pretty big name in the division. Cruiserweights Willis Lockett and Prince Badi Ajamu fought with Willis Lockett getting the edge there. 16-22-6 is his record. So he beats a guy he probably wasn't expected to beat, who falls to 28-4-1. And I guess I didn't set up a login here. But I guess when you log in, you're able to see the results and stuff.
Yeah, that is cool.
But I don't know how that was. A decision or knockout or what? Just says win right in front of me here. But yeah, that was a big fight last week. The last big fight. Schedule. Oh, wait a second. Mikey Garcia beating Sergey Lipinets. Somebody's O went there. Sergey's. Mikey goes to 38.
I mean, Garcia, you know, did what he had to do, you know? Good fighter. I mean, it's like you have a thing here. It's like you had a good fighter against a borderline great fighter. Mm-hmm. That's what it was. And the right fighter, the better fighter, won.
And my boy, Rances, takes his first loss. Rances Barthelemy. Seen him grow up in the division, but you know, he did get a gift win. We had his promoter on the show to argue this. He got a gift win over the guy from Pakistan, I believe. Pakistan. He came from Pakistan. He came over to Canada and fought this guy Rances on ESPN. And I thought he really beat the shit out of him, but the decision went to Rances. He was the promoter's guy, so. I was very disappointed about that. And then we had the promoter on, and he made his case for Rances winning. And, you know, he kind of made some good points, but at the same time, I still thought that Rances got a little hometown cooking. But Kirill Relic didn't really give the judges much of a choice. He gave him a one-sided beating, moves to 22-2, one of those two losses being their last fight. I guess Rances also got sort of a gift win in their last fight, so... This time, Kirill Relic did not leave much choice. It was a unanimous decision win for him. Pretty much won every round down in Texas. And then Richard Comey at lightweight. No relation.
That was an impressive fight. I mean, he broke the kid's jaw, or I forget if it was his jaw or his orbital socket. But that was a back-and-forth fight, very entertaining, and Comey's a tough cookie. I got to see him fight live last year in that razor-thin loss to Robert Easter. And Comey's no joke, man.
Yeah, the guy who was facing Alejandro Luna came in at 22-0, so dropped his first fight in that one. And Comey obviously shows that he can come back from a couple losses. There was two losses in a row, too, because they do show you the last five fights, and those two were right back-to-back. Mario Barrios came in at 20-0, improves to 21-0, beating Yudi Bernardo, who has three losses now to go with 23 wins. We had Brandon Figueroa also staying undefeated, moving to 15-0 against Giovanni Delgado, 16-7 now. That is it for the big fights from last week. Last Saturday, anyway. There was a couple from Friday. See if I can find them. Friday night fights. Vacant World Boxing Council Latino light flyweight title was on the line in Federal, Mexico. Saul Juarez, 23-7-1 going in, moves to 24 wins over Gilberto Parra Medina, falls to 26-4 there. There's a guy fighting in the main event. This must have been a mismatch of last week. At the Beachcomber Club in Lincolnshire, United Kingdom. Main event was super lightweight's Kevin Hooper coming in with 20 wins, 5 losses against Fonz Alexander. His record is 5 wins and 72 losses.
That's our one for the week. There we go.
That was last week.
Wow. 5 and 72.
The main event. 5 and 72. I wonder how the announcers handle that. Like, do you emphasize the losses more?
3 of these wins coming by way of knockout. How many draws? 72
losses. Regis won last week. Not Philbin, but Progress. He is 21-0 now, beating Julius Ndongo. Falls to 22-2. That one was for the interim WBC World Super Lightweight title. And the big one, Ivan Baranchik beating Peter Petrov. So he improves to 18-0. Peter falls to 38-6-2. And this, I like this one because it's, it goes right along with my business name, the Deadwood Society. It was at Deadwood Mountain Grand in Deadwood, South Dakota. I should be like David Letterman and have like my official company headquarters there. Find somebody who lives out there. Send all my mail to Deadwood, South Dakota. Anyway, yeah. Peter Petrov. I didn't see any highlights of this, but you know, I did see, I think he won that Boxino tournament on ESPN that they had, Peter Petrov. So he's been around, had a lot of tough fights, but could not beat Ivan. And then a guy from Connecticut that had a little bit of a troubled past, Matt Remillard, proving his comeback streak there. Getting another big win, proves to 27-1 over another Jesus, Jesus A. Valdez, last Friday, 22-3-1. And then if that's not enough, Jesus getting their ass kicked. We had Juan Jesus Rivera losing on the undercard, too. Tough week last week if you're Jesus going into a boxing match. Stick to church. The boxing isn't working out for the Jesuses. All right, now we've got this coming Saturday, of course, St. Patrick's Day, so you'd think there'd be a lot of fighting.
Should be all Irish guys.
Yeah. See what we got going on. I know there's a big one in the Boston area. I've been promoting on the blog. And it's Danny O'Connor versus Steve Claggett. We were supposed to have Steve on the show, but somehow we got our lines crossed. Didn't get that opportunity, but maybe we'll get him after the fact. That should be a good fight. That's the main event that we'll get to that when we find it. But here's one in Victoria, Australia, worth mentioning. Sam Solomon back fighting again.
Wow.
45-14. Giving another shot against Wes Capper, who is 19-2. And it's for a title, the vacant International Boxing Federation International Middleweight title. So good luck to Sam. He's had some tough ones. There was one where his knee blew out. And he kept fighting, and, you know, they gave him a lot of credit for having heart, but, you know, it's not fun to watch in that kind of a situation. Let's see what else we got going on. Here's one in Malaysia. It's where Manny wants to fight. I guess they're trying to bring in some good cards. His main event's worth talking about. Welterweights Kudratilo Abdukakarov, who is 13-0, fighting Laszlo Toth, who is 25-3-1, for for the World Boxing Council silver welterweight title. And this is a great name for a boxer. Not the first one, but the second one. We'll get to it. Muhammad Shayran, who is 6-1 at featherweight, will be fighting Eric Dez Troyer. D-E-Z Troyer. He is the Dez Troyer. 11-4-1. Eric Dez Troyer. Good name for a boxer. That one's for the vacant World Boxing Council Asian Boxing Council silver featherweight title. Don't say that 10 times fast. All right. Now, if you happen to be in Quintana Roo, Mexico on Saturday, you can see a couple veterans fighting each other here. And it's, I don't even know if there's a lot of fighters, even in this day and age today, who will get to these win totals. But we've got Christian Mijares, who is 58-8-2, fighting Fernando David Saucedo, who is 61-7-3. A lot of fights between them. That is 119 wins between these two guys. 119. And then if you consider their ties and losses, that's another 18 fights. 20 fights, yeah. Another 20 fights. Lots of action. Well, here's Jack as is his brother, I guess. Well, there's two S's. Oh, so this guy is really named Asses. Robson Asses. 16-5, fighting Patrick Szymanski, who's 18-0 in Poland. That's a tough name. Yeah, no wonder he's fighting in Poland. You don't want to come to the United States with that name. Asses. All right. Floyd Mayweather Boxing Academy is having an event this Saturday. Guess where that is?
Las Vegas?
Nope. Zhukovka, Russia.
Wow, I was close.
I thought it was the other guy there, Roy Jones Jr., who got Russian citizenship, but I guess they like Floyd Mayweather over there in Russia. They're having a fight. Zoltan Szabo is in the main event. He's 21-10, fighting Georgi Chelokhashev, who is 13-1-1. And then we got the vacant World Boxing Association Intercontinental Super Lightweight title on the line in the co-main event. And this guy's fought a long time to get here. Batir Ahmedov, he's 2-0. Fighting Ricky Sismondo, who is 33-10-3. Yeesh. Crazy records there. And then the vacant Russia lightweight title is on the line between a couple undefeated guys. Nikita Kuznetsov, 8-0 with one draw. And Elnir Samedov, who is 6-0. And it's probably the best fight on the card, is Nikolai Potapov. He is 17-1-1 at bantamweight, fighting Alexander Saltykov, who is 11-45-3. Yikes. That's over in the Floyd Mayweather Academy over there. Tell somebody you're going to the Floyd Mayweather Boxing Academy next summer. And then tell them right before you go it's in Russia. I think you're the whole time you're going to Vegas. Oh, here's the mismatch of this week. Coming from the Shrine Temple in Macon, Georgia. It's definitely the mismatch of the week. Even though this guy's got a winning record, 4-2. At super welterweight, Martez Jackson is facing a big uphill battle. He's fighting Matthew Strode, who is 24-6. Although four of those losses have come in his last five bouts, those last six bouts. Yeah, too bad. And here's Danny O'Connor, 29-3, fighting Steve Claggett, who's 26-4-1, for the World Boxing Council International Silver Super Lightweight title. And another great matchup in the co-main event here. TJ Doheny, undefeated at 18-0, fighting Mike Machine Gun Oliver, who's 26-7-1. Used to be coached or trained by a former guest of ours, the Iceman, John
Scully. John Scully, right?
Yep. Used to train him. I've seen him actually at a card somewhere. Seen him in attendance, I think in Boston somewhere, years ago. Then we got Greg Vendetti on the card. He's 17-2-1, fighting Engelberto Valenzuela. 11-12 is his record. All right. And at the Madison Square Garden Theater in New York, we got a Bob Arum card on ESPN on Saturday. Jose Carlos Ramirez in the main event, 21-0, fighting Amir Imam, who is 21-1, for the vacant World Boxing Council World Super Lightweight title. And then we got light heavyweights Alexander Gvozdzik, who is 14-0, fighting Mehdi Amar, who is 34-5-2. Yeah, actually, this is probably one of the best Bob Arum cards I've seen in a long time as far as records. Lightweights also on the card. Felix Verdejo, 23-0, fighting Antonio Lozada Jr., who is 38-2. No belt there, but there's a belt in the next one. Christopher Diaz at Super Featherweight, 22-0 is his record coming in, fighting Braulio Rodriguez, who's 19-2. That one's for the World Boxing Organization NABO Super Featherweight title. Let's see. Idea for the week. Oh, I found a new mismatch of the week. From Nashville, Tennessee, at the State Fairground Sports Arena. Bottom of the card, Luis Galarza comes in with a whopping 21 wins to go with 4 losses. He's fighting poor Matt Murphy, who is 3-22-3. And that's at the bottom of the card. The top card on the top fight on the card is Edwin Reyes, who's 7-3-2, fighting Armando Vasquez, who is 25-20-1. Won one time in his last 6 fights. Wild stuff. All right, that's it. That's it. You guys, got any St. Patrick's gems to add to the show this week? Any well wishes for any Irish buddies?
I don't think so.
Quiet week.
Yeah. Slow week. Slow month, really. I mean, end of the month is going to be a lot of action. We've got the big Anthony Joshua versus Joseph Parker match there.
That'll be exciting.
And then we'll see if Deontay Wilder is stepping up to face the winner. Until next week, when there will be probably more action to talk about. That's all we got.
CM Punk.
Yes, CM Punk. For next week's show, too, I'll definitely have my article. I'll lay out my legal case for why that should happen and why we didn't get to talk to Tony about this. But my theory, Tony, is I think I mentioned it before, you need to get CM Punk another fight. You can't expect CM Punk and Floyd Mayweather to work right now because, already the A side is Floyd Mayweather no matter what happens in CM Punk's next fight. But you have a guy who's just coming off one of the best, crazy MMA versus boxing debate wins that you could imagine having, even though it wasn't boxing. So, he's talked about it. He said he's coming over to MMA, but it's not quite definite if he can make it yet. But if you put him in again against a guy who's very inexperienced like CM Punk, it can't be too much of a walk, The guy has to have a chance. It has to look good for them to sell tickets. So you have to have a guy like CM Punk get another big win under his belt before it's marketable. And the article I sent you guys was all about how this UFC made a huge mistake not making it happen right now. Well, give it time. And I told Tom, you probably heard this, Tony, but Floyd's actually working on a video game right now. So keep your eye out for that.
Really?
Yep.
That
was good. Yep. Floyd Mayweather's punch out. Coming to a game console near you. Who knows? All right, guys. Thanks for stopping by, and we will chat next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Adios.